This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And there's the final whistle. Sporting Kansas City have won the 2017 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup.
Brought to you by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We've got Missouri covered.
One thing we do know about this SKC side here, there is tremendous team spirit. Oozing through the dressing room as Lindsay progresses down the left-hand side.
Has to put the cross in with his left foot. It falls to Jurso. And a punching save. The rebound is in. Daniel Shalloway has pulled one back for Sporting Kansas City.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. And I'm already laughing because what a show we have for you.
Not much
today
to talk about.
Yeah, what are we going to do? We got an hour to fill here, El Jefe. I don't know how we're going to do it.
No idea.
That is the voice of the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. I'm Nate Bucati. And yeah, we could spend an hour recapping the amazing, thrilling, epic come-from-behind victory by Sporting Kansas City, previewing the big matchup against Montreal Impact, an opportunity to get a road win for Sporting KC coming up this Saturday, talking about the incredibly thrilling World Cup that's taking place at the same time. And, by the way, we're going to talk with Graham Smith. And this, just trust me, is a conversation you are going to want to stay tuned for. A young man making his MLS debut, thoughtful, thought-provoking, a very interesting story to tell that we're going to ask him about. And not to mention just the insight into the locker room of what it was like at halftime for that team. And these are all things that you're going to want to listen to on the show coming up. So, yeah, we got a lot to get to.
No kidding.
Where do we start? You want to start comeback Sporting Kansas City? Do you want to start Argentina surviving the group stages? Where do we want to begin here?
I'll start with the mea culpa from last week where you said this wasn't a normal World Cup, and I said it was. And it seems that that's not the case when we had the first 0-0 today. And what was it? 30-something games before that happened, so that had never happened.
And it was a terrible 0-0
Well, I mean, you always get a zero. I feel like you always get 0-0s in the group stage, and especially in the last game.
Yep.
But to not have one before this, we've been extremely blessed for that. And all the set-piece goals, the high amount of set-piece goals, which I think is a lot to do with VAR, but I guess not a lot, but a little bit to do with VAR. It definitely – it's churning along, and – these final group days of simultaneous play, just unbelievable today with Argentina and Nigeria, wasn't it?
It was, and it's been interesting, though, because there have been a lot of unpredictable results, I would say, so far. But it seems so far that, for the most part, the chalk has held. You know, I mean, we can talk about the crazy results in the Portugal and Spain games yesterday, but they both go through. And Spain wins the group. You know, we can talk about Russia's dominating performance in their first two games, but they were against teams I don't think it's that surprising that they would have won. I don't think it's stunning to see Uruguay win that group convincingly and Russia finish second. You know, now we see
France-Denmark is probably chalk in that group.
That's chalk. And then, you know, Argentina and Croatia, maybe the order surprised people a little bit with Croatia being as dominant as they were, but those two teams advancing through is not a surprise to anyone. So you had all this drama. You had all these, you know, interesting results so far, but in some ways that could be the perfect scenario because it's going to set up for some amazing knockout round games in the very first round of the knockout round as well, like France versus Argentina. Are you kidding me?
And on the same side, Uruguay, Portugal.
Yeah.
Well, that side looks like it's going to just be a murderer's row with Argentina finishing second. I mean, that side looks absolutely brutal. You're going to get one of Belgium and England on that side. That side of the bracket looks unbelievable. But that's a good point that there's been all this craziness and somehow chalk has gone through so far. I still think the performances of these teams like Nigeria against Argentina today and like Iran and Morocco – I just think that the world is catching up. I really do. I mean, some of these countries, you look at I saw the population numbers for Iran versus Portugal. So many more people in Iran. Mm-hmm. And so I just think I think the world is catching up to some of these big soccer nations. And maybe as of so far, they're going to keep going through. But You know, one of these days, there's going to be an African team that wins the whole thing, or a CONCACAF team that wins the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
An Asian team that wins the whole thing.
Maybe it's
going to
be Mexico this year.
They're looking good.
They look good.
They could still
go
out, though.
But they look good. Yeah, they might not even advance tomorrow. Yeah, if you think that it's been fun so far, just wait till tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be just an epic day. I cannot wait for tomorrow morning. For those two games, Mexico versus Sweden, and then Germany playing to win the group as well.
Against
South Korea. So and South Korea's not a bad team. So, boy, it's going to be a lot of fun. Here's another reason that this World Cup is different than all the World Cups in the past. VAR has come to the surface, and what I think is interesting, Carter, is here in MLS, we've had a year and a half to get used, well, a year, basically, to get used to it and to learn to loathe it as much as we loathed the idea of not having it in the past. And at first in this World Cup, most of the decisions seem to be pretty much right. And I was seeing a lot of chatter on Twitter from people saying, boy, if MLS could just execute VAR the way that they're doing it at the World Cup, then all would be right with the world.
Yeah, it was quick,
so it's,
efficient
it's, yeah,
it's at the beginning.
VAR is not the problem. It's the implementation in MLS that's the problem. Last couple of days, it's gotten a little more controversial. A handball's given yesterday that's not given today. That handball keeps Argentina most likely in the World Cup. They're down a goal. They need two goals to advance if that penalty is awarded and converted by Nigeria. What's the difference in the two plays?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing here is they're just not consistent, some of these rulings that have happened from VAR, because you get the Mascherano tackling the Nigerian player today in the box, and that's awarded a penalty. They don't even go and review the Serbia-Switzerland one where it looked pretty clear-cut that two Swiss players brought down the Serbian guy. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration is coming from. And maybe that's not even a VAR thing. Maybe that's just a clear definition of the rules. But, it did start really clear-cut, and it's gotten a little foggier since then.
Yeah, so my answer to the difference in the two handballs, which, by the way, in my opinion, there is no difference. If one's a handball, the other's a handball. It's in the rules of the game, not in VAR. There is, and this is something that you and I talked about when we were debating whether or not VAR would be a good thing, video review would be a good thing for soccer, for Major League Soccer. My point all along is that almost every call in soccer involves an element of interpretation. There are a few circumstances where a guy is either offsides or he's not. The ball is either all the way over the line or it's not. Those involve no interpretation. Almost every other call on the field, even clear-cut handballs, unless a guy intentionally swats at a ball to hit it, which hardly ever happens, there is an element of interpretation. The language of the law says deliberate. Well, that definition to me might mean something different to you. We hear people interpret it all the time.
Yep.
Some people think that means intentional. Some people think that means if your hand is away from your body in an unnatural position. Some people think it means do you gain a clear advantage by blocking a ball that was, you know, intended by someone else to go somewhere. Some people think it's hand to ball or ball to hand. None of those things are in the rule book, by the way. The only thing that's in it is deliberate touching of the ball. And we clearly see that it's still a human being at the end of the day with the video review there to look at it. So it still comes down to a person. Now, the only thing that VAR does, and we can argue whether or not this is a good thing, I think at the end of the day it's a good thing. It gives that official, with his human interpretation, the ability to look at it again to see if what he saw was what he thought he saw the first time.
Yeah.
And that is a good thing, in my opinion. But if anybody thinks it's going to stop controversies, inconsistent decisions, because one ref makes one call, one ref makes another, that's a fool's errand, because this is not going to solve that.
It's not. There's still going to be that guy making his decision based on his interpretation, and we've seen that so far in this World Cup for sure.
Should a penalty have been given today in the case of the Nigeria-Argentina game? Did Nigeria deserve a penalty there?
I just think those ones are so harsh. I don't think it should have been awarded the other day. And I guess this goes back to just the way the rule is written as well. But when you head it down off your own hand, I just, for me, that's, that's really harsh inside the box. You're not trying to do that. You're not blocking someone from the other team and their attempt to play the ball into the box. At that point, he's going up for the cross, and he just mishit it, and it comes off his shoulder and his head onto his hand. So for me, no. What about you?
I think I agree with you from a spirit of the law standpoint.
Yeah, spirit of the law, spirit of the game.
But, you know, it's funny because I feel that way sometimes. You know, I think it's a little too harsh in the sport of soccer sometimes. I can't remember which game it was now in this World Cup where a penalty was awarded where a guy was in the corner of the penalty
sprinting
area.
Sprinting away. Iceland, I think, right?
Yeah, toward the byline.
Yeah.
And the ball's going out of bounds. He's no threat to score whatsoever, and he gets tripped and fouled. Now, it was a foul, but in no way, shape, or form was it preventing any sort of goal-scoring opportunity. That punishment doesn't fit the crime there, and I don't know what the solution is to those things, but I hate seeing that.
Yeah.
I was of the opinion that on the dive, who was accused of the dive? Neymar was accused of the dive. I think you and I both disagreed on that one.
Yeah.
Almost everybody in the world said that was a flop and no penalty. In my opinion, that's a clear-cut goal-scoring opportunity. He's just done his opponent with a Cruyff turn that's sending him to the floor. He's setting himself up for a shot from 6 yards away, and the guy reaches out and grabs him. Does he pull him all the way to the ground? No. Could Neymar have maybe fought through it and got a shot? Maybe yes. But he intentionally grabbed his opponent to gain an advantage in a situation that was leading to a wide-open goal-scoring chance. For me, that's more of a penalty than tripping a guy that's running away from the goal 18 yards from the goal mouth. But, you know, that's...
I would agree with you, other than I disagree that he grabbed him. I think he reached to grab him and then barely brushed him. So that I agree with you in terms of the guy sprinting away. Like, that's not a goal-scoring opportunity, and it seems really harsh and unfair. But just in the Neymar case, I disagree.
But so for this handball, I think I'm with you. I don't, because there's that interpretation of deliberate, not deliberate, if he had gained a real advantage on the play, I might feel differently. But the ball fell right to the Nigerian player who had a shot, and the referee allowed advantage to play on, which means the advantage was there. He did not gain an advantage from the ball accidentally striking his arm.
The thing that for me is a bit worrying, too, is with that and with the Ronaldo hand to the face thing. I'm just curious, and I know this is the skeptic in me and the cynic in me, but if those are reverse, if that play happens to a Nigerian guy in the box, is Argentina awarded a penalty? I think more likely, yes. And then if Ronaldo is a guy getting a hand to his face, is the other guy sent off? I think more likely, yes. And that's a little bit cynical, but that's another part of VAR where they're going to watch these replays. And they can have some time to think about the consequences of their actions and think about the individuals and the teams.
The magnitude of it.
The magnitude. Yeah. I'm just curious. And I've seen some people, some famous soccer figures, questioning if that's not Ronaldo, is that guy sent off?
I mean, think about the magnitude. It's not just the result of that game, but Ronaldo would be sitting out the next game in the knockout round.
Exactly. And that was pretty innocuous. But at the same time,
Does that deserve a red card in your opinion?
Oh, man. I mean, letter of the law, yeah. But for me, I don't think so, just because, again, spirit of the game. He's not trying to punch the guy, I don't think. But
I don't think he's in danger of really injuring somebody.
Yeah.
There are a lot of strikes to the face that are not in danger of injuring anybody whatsoever. But
it's a physical game. You're gonna take some knocks. But it is,
if you hit someone in the face, it's a red card. I think that it's almost more damning that the referee gave him a yellow there.
Yeah.
Because he's admitting that something happened.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing that happened was his elbow swinging at the guy's head.
100%.
So what are you giving him a yellow card for? Yeah. I mean, that was basically saying, I know that it happened. I don't feel comfortable giving him a red card because it's Ronaldo, so I'm going to give him a yellow card.
Yeah.
And that almost makes it worse.
Yeah, still some stuff to sort out. Still some stuff to sort out for sure.
All right, now let's move on to Sporting Kansas City's epic comeback on Saturday night against the Houston Dynamo. We've been treated to some thrilling finishes on the road, at home, and this one just adds on to the list. I'm not even going to ask you where to rank it, but maybe what does this mean when we look back on this season? Those 3 points... what will the significance be for Sporting KC?
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. You look at what they miss out on a home playoff game by 1 point last year.
Mm-hmm. And a 0-0 draw against the Houston Dynamo played a huge factor in that.
Yep. But then you also think about games where they didn't close out, like the Montreal game with the back pass. And mm-hmm. so for them to come from a losing position, 2-0 down at halftime, and they really were just terrible in the first half. And so for them to come from behind, I think it's huge. And we've seen it a few times from this team this year. They've got something about them. And so I think the 3 points could be huge for sure, but I think you also saw what it meant to the players towards the end of the game when Ilya is pumping fans up in the corner there. I mean, that is not something I would expect from him.
Right.
And so I just think that the players really, I think it's going to give them a huge boost that the way they played in the second half from the very first kick of the ball, they know that if they have that mentality, they can do that to any team in this league. So I think that'll have a huge boost to their mentality.
And I think that's a huge point because of what the stated goal is of this team now. They're not shying away from the fact that they want in on the Supporters Shield race. Look, we know anybody who's followed MLS long enough knows that for almost every team in the league, you're going to have those games where you don't have it, where it doesn't go your way. Unexpected result. You drop a result against a lesser team or a team at home that you don't think you're going to lose points against. And that's just part of the nature of the sport in this league because it's such a grind of a season and because the teams are so even. But if you want to win Supporter Shield, you don't get to have very many of those nights.
Yeah.
You get few less of those nights than hardly anyone else in the league if you want to really go win the Supporter Shield. And I think that's one of the reasons that they are so keen to win that, because that's the one thing they haven't done as a core group of players. So, you know, and we were talking with Matt this morning, and he said watching it up from the press box, he kind of thought, is this going to be one of those games? It's just one of those nights. We got to chalk it up. To come back from that and say, no, we're not allowing it to be one of those nights. We're going to win this game. And it wasn't just a flurry in the last 10 minutes. It was the entire second half.
Yeah, and to be able to maybe, you know, the header from Espinoza that gets saved spectacularly, mm-hmm. at that point it does seem like, okay, it's one of those nights. But I think to add to that, even more impressive is when they get the equalizer, you could tell that this was a team that was, they knew, hey, we've got a lot of time here. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it wasn't that much. It was 5 minutes of regulation, maybe?
It was the 86th minute.
Yeah, and plus out of time. Happened, so. And so, but you could tell.
They were up a man at that point.
They're up a man, but you could tell the reaction from the crowd helped, but also just the team. You could look on them sprinting back to the midway line. They knew they had time for a winner, and the way that they were playing, that they weren't just going to rest on their laurels and take a point from, you know, that's a situation where you would have taken a point at halftime probably. Mm-hmm. And they didn't wait around for that point.
Well, and I think I even made the comment on the radio. Now, I made the one smart comment on the broadcast, TV and radio, where I said, you know, 2-0, Sporting's got them right where they want them. You know, that's the toughest lead to protect. But then when they were down 2-1, I said, you know, now after the 80th minute, you got to think they'd be happy with a point. Wrong. They got that second goal. And I will say that once they got it, it was like that second goal was more surprising to me than the third goal. When they got the second one, you thought, man, they've absolutely got the Houston Dynamo on their heels right now.
Yep, it did seem like that. And also just the tactical stuff that we've mm-hmm. seen from this team. This isn't the first time that they've thrown Rubio and Kyrie on at the same time. And then you get kind of like a 4-2-2-2, a 4-2-4 with Russell and Shallowy out wide. That's really dangerous. And I know you leave yourself exposed at the back, but when they've been chasing games late on, this has worked for them a few times now.
Well, Daniel Shallowy had a goal and two assists, another game-winning assist. Kyrie Shelton and Diego Rubio with goals off the bench for both of them. Diego Rubio now 3 goals this season. He's scoring a goal every 31 minutes he's on the field, which is incredible. Kyrie Shelton, obviously, that's a massive goal for him as he's got his second on the season. One other thing I wanted to point out before we take a break, going back and watching the highlights of that game, something that I didn't notice as much while it was happening is the role that Jalen Lindsey's service down the left-hand side played in a couple of those opportunities. The header by Espinoza that you mentioned, that was a great goal-scoring opportunity, and the first goal came from a cross by Lindsey that first Johnny Russell had a shot at. It kind of flicked on to Gerso Fernandez. His shot was blocked into the path of Shallowy, who put it home. So he doesn't get an assist on any of those, but we're talking again about a right-footed player playing at left back as basically the fourth choice at left back because of all the injuries, getting in the attack, which is what Peter Vermes wants from his fullbacks, and providing service that led to one goal and could have easily led to more.
Yeah, he's been really bright, and I think even more so, you look at just the tough matchup that he and Graham Smith had. Albert Elise, one of the best players in the league, And I think he gives most backlines a headache, and he certainly did that in the first half. But then in the second half, you didn't really hear a whole much from him. And I think they did well to I think that just was overall the team performance lent itself to that. But it was good to see that they didn't let that bother them. And then, like you said, Lindsey, especially in the second half, he was a monster. There's one pattern of play that you and I talked about after the game. Separately, we had both noticed that when he got kind of pinned back and there was a double team coming at him, and normally
he was pinned up against the line.
Up against the line, you thought maybe try and play it off one of the players or try and squeeze it around the other guy to get it back to Melia. No, he kept the ball, kept a cool head, split the two of them with a perfect pass to Ilya, and also when he played the pass, got on his horse and made the move down the left-hand side, and that led to one of the better chances early on as well. He's coming on leaps and bounds.
And this team's had upwards of 9 players listed on their injury report over the last month at one time, and yet they're 9 matches unbeaten in all competitions. Now I'm starting to lose track.
I think that's right, yeah.
It's 8 or 9 in all competitions. It's an incredible run by Sporting Kansas City. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk with Graham Smith. One of those, depth being called on again. There have now been 4 different center backs used for Sporting Kansas City this year. He came in and helped Sporting Kansas City get the win. We're going to get to know Graham Smith. This is an interview you will want to hear when we come back.
Ball falls to Diego Rubio. Now Johnny Russell. Now Daniel Shalloway. Back to Rubio! What a goal! You simply cannot count Sporting Kansas City out. Diego Rubio on for a matter of seconds. And he's brought Sporting Kansas City level.
And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City show here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810. WHB, Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. And we are joined on the phone lines now by a very special guest, man who made his Major League Soccer debut, his Sporting Kansas City debut, and his first ever Major League Soccer start in the thrilling 3-2 victory over the Houston Dynamo on Saturday. It's defender Graham Smith. Graham, good evening. Thanks a lot for the time. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm just finished up watching that Argentina final. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty wrapped up in that. Let's just go ahead and start right there. What have you made of this World Cup so far? And I guess today was about as good as it gets so far in terms of drama.
Yeah, no kidding. This, when you get these group games going out at the same time on the third match day, there's always some drama. And this was peak World Cup today. It's awesome to see Argentina go through. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they'll have a lot of momentum going forward. I could see them making a pretty long run.
We won't quote you. We won't tell anybody that you said that. So don't worry about it. If it makes you feel any better, your captain, Matt Beisler, was on our morning show today and said he picked Argentina in the player pool to win the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm with Brazil. I've made, full disclosure, I've probably made 4 predictions, all 4 with different winners. So I'm bound to be right on one of those.
Who are the 4 teams you got?
I've got Germany, okay. Brazil, Argentina.
Okay, that's
only 3, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
Out on a limb with those 3.
Right.
I went on a limb. I took Belgium beforehand. I feel like I've got an outside shot.
I don't know. The golden generation is looking pretty good now.
Yeah, not much of a limb. Just like 4th or 5th favorite, not the top 3.
Well, hey, let's talk about your game. Tell me about it. First game as an MLS player. After being a first-round pick, we know you've played a lot of minutes with Swope Park Rangers so far this year, but tell me about maybe how you found out that you were going to be in the starting 11 on Saturday and what that process was like for you.
Yeah, so I found out on Friday morning. We had a pregame practice, and the coaches hand out these jerseys to kind of signify who's on what team, and I start seeing Ike's got a blue, Zeusy's got a blue, Illy's got a blue, all these guys have blues, and then Z comes up to me, hands me a blue, and and then obviously coaches came up afterwards, so that's when I kind of got the first hint.
So did they say anything? I mean, Z, by the way, is Zoran Savic, assistant coach, for those that don't know. Does Z say anything to you? Does anybody say anything, or is it just like, yep, you're wearing blue today?
Yeah. Everybody kind of says things individually. Peter told me, go out there, play with confidence. That's the biggest thing. You're getting this opportunity because we think you deserve it. You've been playing well. And Kerry, too. Kerry had told me the day before, kind of coincidentally, that I've been progressing pretty well. And the biggest thing is after you make a mistake, just keep pushing through and keep trying things, not be afraid to try things. And, yeah, it just gave me a lot of confidence in the lead up.
So that's what some of the coaches told you. What did you get to talk to maybe Ikel Parr or Matt Beisler? Did they have any words of wisdom before you, before you made your MLS debut?
Yeah, they did. Bees sent me a nice text beforehand that it's the same game you've played 100 times. I was so wrapped up in the game that I didn't get the chance to reply to him. So he politely reminded me after the game that he had sent me that text. I wanted to make sure I got it. And I went out to dinner with Brad Evans the night before and talked a little soccer, but it was more just nice to kind of get my mind off of what was going to happen the next night, and it was cool to relax with him. And then Ike was unreal because he made it very simple what he needed from me in the game. He wanted me to command Jalen and talk to him on certain things, and he said he'd handle the rest, and that was huge for my first start.
So did he tell you that you were going to have to come kind of give him a pat on the back after a mistake early on in the game?
No, he didn't warn me about that beforehand.
We love Ikel Parr here, so I had to get my little digs when I get a chance because he's a Duke fan, and that just is where it all starts for me.
Oh, gotcha.
Hey, tell me about the dinner with Brad. Was that something that you guys had just already had planned out ahead of time, or was this one of those wily veteran taking the young guy that's about to make his first start and saying, hey, let's go to dinner?
I think it's a little both. Brad and I have done a couple things. Oh, sorry about that. Brad and I have done a couple of things. He'll just take me out or we'll go do something. But this one was just right before. I think he knew that it was a kind of stressful situation for me, and he was just super helpful.
Yeah, not a bad veteran there to give you some advice, I'd imagine. As we're talking about you reaching this great moment in your career, making your MLS debut, I'm curious as to maybe some of the backstory about you. I don't think we know a whole lot about you, Graham, and kind of what was it like for you growing up as a soccer player, as a fan? Were there any particular players you paid attention to, or what was it like in your youth, and how did you come across playing soccer?
Yeah. So I obviously grew up in Denver, Colorado. I played for the same club since I was 8 years old, Real Colorado. And when I was going through the college kind of search process, I really wanted to go to Denver. However, it didn't work out with the head coach they had there at the time. I wasn't recruited necessarily very hard by him. So I went to Oregon State. And that's where I played with Kyrie, actually, for his senior year. And then there was a coaching change at Denver, and the assistant coach who had been recruiting me, Jamie Franks, became the head coach. And it was a program that I wanted to play for growing up. I think it's the best program in college soccer, obviously a little biased. But that was a opportunity that I really couldn't pass up, and I think I made a really smart decision going there. And then in terms of players that I kind of looked up to growing up, there was actually, you'll remember this name, Amadou Dia, T. Dia. He went to my high school, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I followed his experience when he came out here, and it was cool to get him to see him getting all that success. And Rogers, actually, from where we're from, similar areas growing up, so... During the winter, going into the drafts, we would play pickup at the same spot, and I'd always hear him talk about Sporting and how much he likes it and what a great setup it is. And, so I kind of had those thoughts going through my mind when I got drafted.
Were you always a soccer guy? I mean, what got you into the sport of soccer? Did you play other sports as well?
Yeah, I wasn't a soccer guy. I played a little basketball. I played high school basketball my freshman and sophomore year, but I like to joke I was more of a game player. With competitive soccer, there's really not that much time to do both. So they let me skip some practices and mostly just play in the games. So I did that. I think that was super beneficial growing up, because nowadays, you're kind of a one sport athlete 10, 11 months of the year, right? Mm-hmm. And I was able to kind of have that release in basketball, and it was cool.
We're visiting with Graham Smith, defender for Sporting Kansas City. He was a first-round draft pick out of Denver, as he just mentioned, this offseason, and made his MLS debut in that epic 3-2 victory over the Houston Dynamo on Saturday. We're getting to know Graham a little bit as well. And Graham, I was chatting with you before we went on the air. I had read some quotes from your college coach when you got drafted that said that you went through more adversity through your college career than any player he'd ever coached. And I thought that really stood out to me, because I know that he also coached Courtney Ford, and I'm sure you know Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
We know what he is going through, what he's been through. So I thought, wow, that's saying something. You told me that your father passed away unexpectedly while you were in college. I can't even imagine. Can you put into words what type of a mark that makes on you when you're a college kid?
Gosh, I can't. I mean, I think about him every day. And so that happened June 9th, going into my senior year, out of nowhere, really. And that was right when you kind of get a break from college soccer and you're playing PDL or you're doing something. So I took a little time off that, just to be with my family, because there's so much stuff going on. And I think something that I took out of that is what really got me through that situation is, and obviously still going through it, but is just this mentality that when things get tough, you can't really dwell on it. You have to put your head down and keep working and do what needs to be done for those around you. And Jamie in particular was so helpful, and the whole Denver program was so helpful during that experience, not just with me, but with my family reaching out, and anything we needed, they were there for.
So I would assume, I mean, for most of us, our dad is like the guy that got us into sports. How big of a role was your father in your formative years as a soccer player?
He actually was not much of a soccer player. He played football just in high school. But you wouldn't know that talking to him. When he talks, he didn't have much soccer knowledge, but it would seem like he was the most passionate fan ever, just at my games. And now it was funny hearing him talk, giving some soccer analysis to me afterwards. Sometimes I kind of have to, I kind of have to shrug him off and be like, all right, you don't know what you're talking about.
You've just painted the picture of every youth soccer field in America, by the way.
Yeah, right. Just think about that. That was him.
That's great. But he was a big fan, it sounds like, of Graham Smith. And, That's important. Gosh darn it! When you throw out the date like that, that it strikes me that, I mean, you're not far removed from the anniversary of that event in your life when you go have one of the biggest events in your life. I gotta imagine that was partially on your mind when you took the field on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely! Like we were talking about, every time I take the field, I throw up a little hand signal for him. I do four fingers on my left hand. On my right hand, that was his favorite number. It was every password he had, every username he'd use, 42. And I do that before every half. And I would have thrown it up if I had scored on that corner, but unlucky.
boy, you were close,
not
weren't you?
Not too far,
man.
Yeah, right.
I mean, take me through that moment. Did you think it was going in?
Oh, I thought it was in for sure. I got good contact on it. They didn't leave anybody on the back post, so I was just thinking if I can put it anywhere on there on frame, odds are it would go in and just a little wide.
So the number 42, was that like a jersey number of your dad's favorite player? Like, what? How did 42 become his favorite number?
That was his football number growing up.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
So no 42 for you, though?
No 42. I full disclosure, I didn't get a lot of pick in my number, but it was 16.
Well, I was just looking at the roster while you're saying that. I was like, I wonder, I mean, 42's got to be available, but, you know, you got a higher number. I mean, you know, we got guys down in the 90s. You got a 16 out of it, you know?
I know. Maybe maybe in the future I'll see if I can work in a swap, but we'll see.
we're visiting with Graham Smith. Hey, let's go back to the game for a second, because we haven't really touched on the actual game itself. I mean, man, you get thrown right into the fire against one of the best attacking teams in all of MLS, and you fall behind 2-0 early. What was going through your mind on the field when this is your MLS debut and you guys are kind of behind it there in, on your home field?
Right. I mean, I was joking with I think Kuzain asked me today. He said, what were you thinking when they scored in the second minute? And I kind of joked with him. I'm like, there goes the debut shutout. But it really makes you – it made me kind of switch on and realize, like, geez, this is MLS – level, like the jump was evident in that moment.
Yeah.
You really can't take any moments off at this level. And I think that it really showed me, one thing I learned is the importance of mentality from the jump, right? You see in the second half, the mentality of the whole team was as good as it can be. And the on-field product really reflected that. In the first half, not so much, and you see that result. But, yeah, I'd say that early goal going down 2-0 in the first half just kind of lit a fire.
Well, I think we were all envisioning one of those trademark Peter Vermes parting everyone's hair in the locker room and peeling the paint off the wall by screaming at everybody. But we heard from Ilya afterwards that maybe he was calmer than you would have expected.
No, he was calmer. It was more before he got in. Graham Zusi and Roger really kind of set the tone through. They had great messages, but they set the tone through the tone of their voices. And, they kind of took that role in that instance.
Wow, that really paints a picture for us. I mean, we always think about what a tremendous manager Peter Vermes is, and for good reason, but man, when you think about just throwing those names out there, Matt Beisler's not even in there, and you got two veterans like guys like Ike Roger and Graham Zusi that can set the tone. And I think any coach would dream of that, right? Like the players kind of policing themselves and having that leadership.
Oh, exactly. The accountability that they showed of the group there was tremendous.
Well, Graham, just quickly. This wasn't your first professional game. You have been getting a lot of minutes with the Swope Park Rangers. Do you think that playing time helped your transition up to the MLS level?
Oh, yeah, very much so. This organization is great because Swope plays the same exact style as Sporting, right? So all the kind of tactics and style of play is basically identical. So when you make that jump, it's an easy transition. You're not trying to learn things on the fly. You kind of have that experience, and getting that game experience with Swope is probably the best way that I've found I've been able to learn. You can only get so much through drills and training and little 11v11 stints in training, and those games help so much.
And Graham, we'll wrap things up. I know we've kept you for a long time here, but this has been great stuff. When you talk about that style, I was thinking about how we know in Sporting system, Peter Vermes wants all of his guys to be willing to play out of the back. They don't want center backs that are just going to, you know, pound the ball up the field and clear everything away. I would think that's a lot of pressure for a rookie, but I saw that you played defensive midfield quite a bit in college, which maybe,
correct,
you know, is a little more common for guys to have to be technical with their feet. Did that experience help prepare you for playing center back in a system like this?
Yeah, definitely. Having that experience as a six, I knew transitioning to the six being defensive midfielder. Obviously, you guys know that, but maybe for the viewers who don't.
Sure.
So that experience, just being on the ball, being able to play, I knew transitioning to the MLS, I'd be that would be one of my strengths, being able to play, being comfortable on the ball from that center back position. And coming to this organization with the style Sporting plays, it's ideal for that.
Well, Graham, we really appreciate the time. Thanks for letting us get to know you a little bit. Congratulations on your debut and what will be an unforgettable game for many reasons as
All
well.
Right.
And onward and upward, man. The best is yet to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that's Graham Smith, defender for Sporting Kansas City. We'll take a break right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Here's Daniel Shalloway. Across to Shelton! They were down! They were not out! Kyrie Shelton! Just his second goal as a Sporting Kansas City man! And it might have just capped an epic comeback for Sporting Kansas City!
And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Pukati along with El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Thanks to Graham Smith. That was a tremendous interview.
Great interview.
Could have kept that going for a while.
Yeah.
He was really a joy to talk to.
Yeah, he's a bright guy. That was really fun.
I think 3.94 GPA in college, something like that. Involving finance, which seems to have math involved, which makes it something I wouldn't have wanted to approach.
Yep. Not for me.
Let's approach a couple of other subjects, Carter, before we sign off here tonight. We'll look ahead to the Montreal Impact game for Sporting in a moment. But first of all, you, of course, as we all know, the play-by-play voice of Swope Park Rangers, who had if we thought that the game between Sporting Kansas City and Houston was bizarre, they said, hold my beer,
and
went out there and won the game, but it was kind of what happened with Las Vegas at the end of the game that was the more did I really just see that happen type moment?
Seriously, it was one of the wildest games, and now actually Swope Park Rangers' last two home games were both 3-2. Same with Sporting KC. So we've had four 3-2 results in a row for these teams at Children's Mercy Park. Been a lot of goals at the old CM Park.
Take it
recently, and there were a couple crackers in this one. And actually, for Sporting fans, it was three Sporting players on loan that scored. Sinovic got a goal early on, just absolutely hammered the ball with his left foot. Mm-hmm. And then Belmar a tap-in, and Kuzain with a Ronaldo-style dead ball, free kick, put the knuckling over the wall, dipping onto the keeper. Really good free kick. And at that point, SPR up 3-1 with about a half hour left, and they really were cruising. Las Vegas wasn't causing them any problems. And then it was getting really chippy throughout that second half. And a defender from Vegas threw a pretty mean forearm shiver, an elbow right to Tyler Blackwood's throat. Somehow doesn't get sent off. It's one of the most baffling decisions I've seen recently. And a minute later or so, after the scuffle had been finally dealt with, all of a sudden they break up the other end, get it back to 3-2, and starts to give Las Vegas a lot of confidence, and they had the better of the last 5 minutes or so, and they get a penalty, and it was a penalty in the last minute of the game. And you have to check this out online. You have to watch the replay because it's unbelievable. Some of you might remember the Thierry Henry, Robert Pires debacle at Arsenal, where they were getting a little too cocky and they tap it forward, do the little trick penalty where you pass it to a teammate instead of shoot. That went wrong for them, but I believe they're up in that game. Las Vegas Lights, down 3-2, you get a penalty in the last minute, and you try that, and they hit it off the post. And that was the last kick of the game, and they lose 3-2. One of the wildest games, a serious wild finish, well worth checking out because that was just crazy. It was stunning.
Yeah, and I know the coach said after the game, well, most teams would only try that if they're up 4 or 5 goals. But I was proud of our guys for trying. There's a reason for that. There's a reason nobody tries that if they need a goal to tie a game and get a result.
Unbelievable.
Unreal stuff. Yeah, you have to check that out online. If you can see it, it's out there on Twitter.
But props to the Rangers. And I think they've won 15, or not, they're undefeated in 15 at home, dating back to last August.
Oh.
So it's a good watch, watching SPR.
Yeah, and again, you see guys that are going to be playing in a Sporting Kansas City uniform, and it makes it a joy to watch for sure. Let's transition over to Sporting Kansas City. They will be taking on the Montreal Impact on Saturday at 6:00. Pregame coverage on Fox Sports Kansas City will start at 6:30, and kick off at 7 right here on Sports Radio 810 and on Fox Sports Kansas City and on the Fox Sports Go app as well. This is a Montreal team that's now actually won two straight. They've played both of those games. Gotta love the MLS schedulers. Two games against the Orlando City.
Just a home and home
side. They won 5-0 on aggregate, 3-0 at home, and then 2-0 at Orlando this past weekend. But I don't know if that paper's over. The controversy that's been taking place in Montreal leading up to this, their owner, Joey Saputo, earlier this year, basically had quotes to the media saying that he's up for trading anyone and everyone on the team. He said, quote, there will be changes. There will be some fans that might not like it, but there will be changes. I'm not happy with the situation. I've had discussions with the technical staff, and the impact will definitely have to move during July's transfer window. I cannot accept where we are at the moment. And basically said that players, he even mentioned personally Ignacio Piatti. He said, I may be speaking a little in the heat of the moment, but seriously speaking, if someone comes to get Piatti and offers me X amount for him, I save on the salary cap and make money. Are we better off having three players at $2 million apiece instead of one player at $6 million? I don't know. Now, look, most people think it'd be impossible for them to trade him with that salary figure and all the implications on the cap. Peter Vermes once told me that he thought Ignacio Piatti was the best player in the league. That was a couple of years ago, I think, but he's still an incredibly gifted player. Ignacio Piatti responded after this last game against Orlando City. He said, if I'm the problem, then I'll go play somewhere else. He said, quote, he is the president. I do everything here on the field. He makes the decisions. I want to stay in Montreal, but if he thinks I'm the problem, I can go play for another club. Yeah, they've won two in a row, but that doesn't exactly seem like a harmonious situation in Montreal right now.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And they won three of four, actually, and those three, they kept clean sheets in all of them. But, yeah, I'm curious, two of the last two against Orlando. And this
they're a hot mess as well.
This is the time to play Orlando. They don't even have a coach at the moment.
Yep.
So, yeah, you wonder if that really is a good indication of where they are. But they did shut out Houston at home a couple weeks ago. So you have to give them credit there. They started the season so poorly. But in talking with Peter Vermes this week, he was saying, you know, it's a new coach comes in. It's a coach from outside the league. It's going to take new coaches anywhere a little bit of time to reshape the team in their image and reshape the team how they want. So I think for him, from his perspective, he would have not been surprised by the early season struggles, especially when you consider the East and how many moves the other teams in that conference made. And so I don't think they're going to be taking Montreal lightly. But that just the whole situation with Piatti and the owner, and that's something to keep an eye on in July, because that's a big piece. If someone is willing to take on that salary, that's a piece that you think could bring a team over the edge. So I'm really curious to see where that goes.
Two big road games coming up for me. For Sporting Kansas City, they've proven they can get results and wins away from Kansas City this year, unlike a year ago. And to me, these are two you look at and say, these are opportunities to get 3 points away from home. Yes, Montreal's in better form of now. I'm not saying that they're a pushover or an easy team whatsoever. Anytime you have a player like Ignacio Piatti on your team, and with the defense they've been playing the last four games, we know it's going to be a challenge. But I still think you can go there and you can win a game. And same thing with Real Salt Lake the weekend after that. This is a team that I think Sporting Kansas City proved already this year. Playing with a very limited lineup, they were able to go get a result in Salt Lake. So very interesting. I think this is going to be a big two-game road trip for Sporting KC. Again, 6 o'clock on Saturday night. You can listen to it here on Sports Radio 810. Watch it on Fox Sports Kansas City or the Fox Sports Go app. And, of course, we will talk to you next week. That's going to do it for this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.